broadcasting program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Absolute Broadcasting, its staff, or advertisers.
Hi, I'm Raquel and my co-host, Sonia, and this is Israel Is Real. We support the Jewish nation by putting a human face and a positive spin on all things Israel. We're going to tell you the story of an ordinary people living in an extraordinary land. Israel is real. Boker tov lekol ha'mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
Shalom to all our listeners from WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. I want to just say that we're very grateful to be on the air, and we're on the air from because of your support. You keep us going. So please consider advertising or donating. We'd also love to hear from you and get your feedback. If you want to know how, then email us at israelisreal1590 at gmail.com. That's israelisreal1590 at gmail.com. We always like to give you a little bit of Hebrew in our Hebrew language section, and our Hebrew word for the day is chaver. Sonia, can you tell us about chaver?
Yes, actually, chaver means a friend, a comrade, a fellow, an associate like you and me, a companion, a member, a schoolmate, a partner, and a connection.
And we are making really good connections today and making good chavirot and chavirim, friends. And we have such amazing guests today that we're going straight to it today. We're not going to take any more time because we have some amazing women here today with us. Joanne Magnuson and Shalom, Joanne.
Shalom, shalom.
And Esther Levins.
Shalom.
Shalom. They are chaverot, lifelong friends, as I understand. They're also chaverot of Israel, lifelong activists for and in support of Israel. They're laughing. Joanne Magnuson is the director of Christian Friends of Yad Vashem, which is an organization in Israel, which we'll hear about. And Esther Levins is the CEO and founder of the Unity Coalition for Israel. And that's only like a tiny bit of what you two have to offer. You're just really amazing. And I've only just met actually some of you, and I've known some of you only a short time, but enough to know that you're both really fantastic women and have so much to offer. We'd like to know a little bit about your personal selves, hear a little bit about your personal stories. Esther, I understand you're from Kansas. What brings you to beautiful New England here where it's snowing today?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to receive an award this coming Sunday, and it's the Genesis Award by a wonderful group of Christians and Jews who are very pro-Israel and who aren't afraid to say so, and they do it very loudly and very clearly. And I came because I've been honored to receive their award.
So the Genesis Award is from what organization is that? What's the actual name of the organization?
It's It's the Christians and Jews United for Israel. It's called CJUI.
CJUI, Christians and Jews United for Israel. Out of where exactly is that?
Boston area, I believe, is their home base, but they work throughout the New England area.
And you're receiving an award for the work that you do on behalf of Israel.
That's correct, yes.
Is this your first award? I can't imagine that it would be.
No, I've been really surprised a few times to receive awards from Christian groups primarily, because I have reached out to the Christian community. I've been very involved in politics and presidential politics and and local Kansas City and Kansas politics. And so I've understood that the Christian world is much larger than the Jewish world. And if we could reach the Christians who were pro-Israel, I thought we'd reach a huge community. So that's what I've been up to lately. Last 18 years, as a matter of fact.
18 is high.
That's right.
So, and you were obviously working together with Joanne. You're here together. Can you tell us briefly how you met and how this connection, how this Haverut started?
Yes, definitely. We were both early members of AIPAC when AIPAC really first got started. And
that's the American Israel Public Affairs Committee.
Right.
Just for listeners who may not know.
Now, that is an official lobby group for Israel. And that was how we both got our feet wet in terms of learning advocacy and learning how to tell Israel's story, which unfortunately Israel doesn't do too well for itself, you know. So we sort of pick up where they leave off, where the Israelis leave off. But here you are doing wonderful things.
Well, we're both also Israeli, and hopefully we're supporting that too, and we're helping out as best we can. I think Israel, although stands alone and is very strong, still is in spite of its Sabra image, the hardcore prickly outside is still in need of help. Mm-hmm. So it's really important what you're doing.
My question is how it's possible that after 64 years since the World War II, it seems like much of the world has forgotten what happened to the Jewish nation. How come that instead of the moral compass, we have an unclear morality, a forgiveness for aggressors, and the great anger for the victims? And this is for you, Joanne, because you came from Yad Vashem.
Well, I, as has been mentioned, I do work on a part-time basis trying to promote relationships between Yad Vashem and American Christian educators. And that's been a really thrilling and satisfying experience. But I have long understood, as a Christian, that we are connected to the original people of God, the children of Abraham, and that I think the Christian church lost its way in the medieval period in many ways and lost track of its own Jewish roots. The fact that Abraham was called from Ur of the Chaldees and told to go to a country he would be shown, and that's what started the whole thing. For people who take the Bible seriously, if you think you just landed somewhere in the Middle Ages or somewhere in the middle of America and have a personal relationship with God without connecting to the people that he originally called, I think we've missed the boat in many ways in the Christian church. I came from a family where the one person who took the Bible seriously was my paternal grandmother. And my first conscious memory in life was at age 4 and a half when they announced on the radio that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. And everyone in the family was sitting around weeping. And my grandmother and I started a habit that night that continued through the years of World War II. And every night after dinner, we sat in front of the radio. And I don't know why we sat in front of it and stared at it. I think we were anticipating television arriving, but it was 10 years later. Anyway, we would listen to the war news, she always called it. And then she was a believer in a God who heard and answered prayer. And she prayed for my cousins who were serving in the military. And then she would always read to me from the Bible. And her favorite prophet was Jeremiah. And she loved the 31st chapter that said, as long as the sun and the moon and the stars endure, God has a covenant with the Jewish people. And she would say to me, Joanne, this is a terrible war, but Hitler will be defeated and the Jews will be back in their ancient land, and we must pray for that. So I spent the war years praying that the Jews would be back in their ancient land, and and occasionally showing up at afternoon movies where I stayed through two double features to watch the newsreel twice to try to figure out what was going on in that place they called Palestine. And finally, at the my grandmother died in May of 1947, and I spent the next year reading through her Bible and looking at all the things she'd underlined, which all pointed to the fact that in the latter days of human history, the Jewish people would be back in their own nation as a sovereign people. And so I wasn't too surprised when I came home from school the next year and saw the headline in the Minneapolis paper, State of Israel Declared. And I thought I'd better pay attention to that. But I think the fact that Israel never really succeeds in getting a popular spot in world opinion has to do with that ancient covenant. Humankind in its present state is in rebellion against the God who made us. And I'm not trying to turn this into a religious activity, but you know, if we don't see that, there's something missing. So that's where the problem starts.
I wanted to ask Esther, I know we've only got a couple of minutes but before the break, but you had a role also in during World War II in helping the Jews come into America. Can you quickly, before we have the break, say that, and we can continue after the break also? What was your role?
Uh-huh. My first job out of college, after college for the summer, was with the United Jewish Social Services. And the victims from the Holocaust, the survivors, were coming in small groups to various cities in the United States. And I was it was my job really to advertise in the Jewish newspapers around the country and put people together with their families and try to locate their relatives. And I did that in connection with finding housing for them and kosher food for them and sometimes jobs. And I met them at the train station, and we proceeded from there. I didn't know Polish, and I didn't know Yiddish, and they didn't know English, and we smiled at each other a lot. Today, these people still remember me. I've just interviewed one wonderful couple who have made beautiful lives in Kansas City. And I would love to tell you just a little bit about how they were received in Kansas City.
I think we'll be able to. We would love to hear that. We're going to go into a break now, and we'll hear about that when we come back.
1590 WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
Liberals pounding other liberals. I'm Bill O'Reilly. The Talking Points memo is next.
A politically combustible search for explosive photographs thrusts a former LAPD homicide detective back into the violence he wanted to escape. I'm Diana Paige Jordan. In the thriller The Hadrian Memorandum, Alan Folsom sends Nicholas Martin, now a landscape architect in London, across several continents.
What really hangs in the balance is a secret agreement between the oil company and the military contractor and a government agency that is driving this whole thing, and the photographs will reveal everything.
What inspires the Hadrian Memorandum?
It's a whole story, like all my stories, are about power and the use and abuse of power.
A spectacular relationship develops between Nicholas and Anne, the alluring oil company board member, as they chase the photographs.
These are adventures, and adventures are sometimes as much an adventure for the author as they are for the characters.
What should readers take away from the Hadrian Memorandum?
I would hope they take something away from it, a better understanding of the human condition.
Available now, the new novel, The Hadrian Memorandum, by Alan Folsom.
Talking Points well understands that within any ideology, there are disagreements. All conservatives do not think the same, and there is lively debate in liberal precincts all day long. Right now, there's a major problem between far-left pundit Arianna Huffington and the Obama administration. Ms. Huffington does not want any more troops sent to Afghanistan, but it looks like President Obama will beef up the U.S. forces there. Because of that, Huffington is asking Vice President Biden to resign if more troops are indeed sent. Mr. Biden is against a larger American presence in Afghanistan, and Huffington says he should stand on principle. If the president ignores his advice, he should quit. Of course, that's not going to happen. Vice President Biden will never quit unless forced to do so. But the fanaticism on the far left is very evident in this case, is it not? And that's a memo. I'm Bill O'Reilly on Westwood One.
Hi, this is Terrence Howard. My mother was the cornerstone of our family. She shaped me as an actor, a musician, as a human being. So when she was diagnosed with colon cancer, it was like our whole family got cancer. And she died when she was only 56, so this is personal. Now hopefully my heartbreak is your wake-up call. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer, but you can prevent this disease. Screening finds precancerous polyps so that they can be removed before they turn into cancer. I've been screened. If you think that you're at an increased risk like I am, ask your doctor when to start screening. And if you're 50 or older, get screened. I don't have my mother anymore. So please, do everything that you can to stay around for yourself and for your family. Screening saves lives.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Live local talk just for Nashua and just right here. Weekday mornings on 1590 WSMN.
Hi, we're back with Israel is Real on WSMN 1590 Nashua's News and Talk. We're your hosts, Rachel and Sonia. We're just two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. We're on the air with your support, and I have to say we're very, very grateful for that support. And we'd love to have your donations and advertising if you're interested to keep us on the air. We'd also like to hear from you. You can write to us at israelisreal1590@gmail.com, israelisreal1590@gmail.com. You can also contact us and hear us at www.wsmnradio.com. And I would want to say that I'm a musician, and often I wonder about copyright, and there's a lawyer here in town who is very helpful on all things intellectual property. Countries depend for much of their success and security on their intellectual prowess and advanced technology. Many companies from here and abroad depend on the patent attorneys at Vern, Main, and Associates to obtain U.S. or global patent protection for their new ideas. Vern, Main, and Associates is an intellectual property law firm right here in Nashua. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, including those musicians, I'd say, contact the legal specialist at Vern, Main, and Associates at their offices on 100 Main Street in Nashua, New Hampshire, or on the web at vernmain.com. That's www.vernmaine.com, vernmain.com. Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know that Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? To receive Vision's email alerts and be informed about Vision's educational activities and opportunities, visit Vision's website at www.nh4israel.org. That's www.nh4israel.org. www.nh4israel.org. And we're back here with Joanne Magnuson and Esther Levins, two brilliant, amazing women who are activists and Chavirot friends in support of Israel. And we were speaking with Esther, who was telling us about her role pre-Israel and post or and during World War II in helping refugees come into America. Did you want to continue that story, Esther?
Yes. We're going to show a film that I just taped with two of the survivors that I met at the train station right after the war, 1946. And they, I asked them how they happened to come to Kansas City, not knowing anybody there. And they said they just happened to hear on the radio in the camp that people could sign up for 100,000 spots. And it was limited to 100,000 that President Harry Truman had designated to be able to legally come into the United States. So they found themselves on a ship, and then somebody talked about Kansas City being a nice place to live. So they said, okay, we'll go to Kansas City. And that's how they wound up there. And I greeted them at the train station. And very shortly after that, two of them got married to each other. And they belonged to an Orthodox congregation that put a full-page ad in the Kansas City Jewish Chronicle inviting the entire Jewish community to their wedding. And they had 500 people at their wedding and many more than 500 gifts. So they had a wonderful send-off. And now they have a son who is a judge. They have two daughters who have graduated from college. And all they talk about is their beautiful life that they've had in Kansas City. So it was heartwarming.
And they find that this is the real victory over the harsh history, you know. However, I have a question for you, Esther. Can you explain to our listeners about the times when a Jewish country was only a dream?
I'm afraid I do remember those days because I grew up in an atmosphere just accepting anti-Semitism, really. For example, in high school, I couldn't join a sorority because they didn't take Jewish members. And I could join a literary society because that was school sponsored. But the private sororities that everybody belonged to, we were excluded from. There was a quota system for medical students, for Jewish doctors, and they were very limited in the number that they took. And therefore, they had to establish their own hospitals because they weren't accepted at most hospitals. And even in my neighborhood where I live now, Jews could not buy property. I mean, you couldn't buy a house if you were Jewish. And they had about six excuses for why they wouldn't sell it to you. But it was the underlying thing was that Jews could not buy in those areas. So I knew what it was like not to have a country, not to be able to point to accomplishments, the wonderful achievements, and the bravery of winning five wars and what have you that the Israelis have miraculously accomplished. And their story really needs to be told in a very positive way because, unfortunately, with the Islamic situation, there's a lot of public relations going into defaming the Jews and defaming Israel and attributing all kinds of blood libels and what have you that are really generated by the Islamist movement, I believe.
I'm wondering, Joanne, also, if you can contribute to that conversation about what life was like. You're, as a Christian, your perspective also on what life was like pre-Israel. You obviously probably didn't experience anti-Semitism, or maybe you did, I don't know.
Well, I grew up in a more or less Jewish neighborhood. Where I lived was about four blocks from the local South Minneapolis synagogue, and I always went to school with Jewish kids. Back in those days, I mean, one of the things I've enjoyed in the years that Esther and I have been friends and we have worked together as Jews and Christians to bring our communities together, it's just so much fun to compare notes, to understand other people's childhood experiences, and get to know each other on a level that's beyond the superficial, because it seemed to me as a child that our relationships, well, of course, even with one another in the Christian world, there was anti-Catholic feelings on the part of Protestants and anti-Protestant feelings on the part of Catholics, and we were probably closer together, so we actually felt more animosity from that direction. The Jews were different enough, and I, of course, had been socialized by my grandmother to think that the Jews were pretty pretty important. So I was really honored to have Jewish friends and to occasionally be invited to a synagogue service or a Seder. But that has become much more popular in recent years. And I do think the twin issues of the awareness of the Holocaust and the success of the State of Israel has changed the picture dramatically. But we can never take that for granted. As Esther says, today anti-Semitism rises again, and we have to be alert to it.
We're speaking today with Joanne Magnuson, who is the director of Christian Friends of Yad Vashem, and Esther Levins, who is the CEO and founder of Unity Coalition for Israel, and who is also receiving here an award, for the Genesis Award, from the Christians and Jews United for Israel organization, I believe, correct?
Correct.
And I wanted to just ask you, I'm curious, because there was a world before Israel and there's a world after Israel. But if you could just sort of pinpoint that moment, and you mentioned it briefly earlier, Joanne, and I want to hear from both of you. What was your reaction when Israel actually officially became a state? And then how did that progress? How were your feelings as it grew and became a reality? If you could sort of talk about that a little bit. Joanne.
Okay. Well, from a Christian perspective, I don't think my experience is at all normative. I credit my grandmother's sympathy and feeling of support for Israel for influencing my life in a way that was quite different from most of my friends. Because when I talk to people I grew up with today, I don't think the rest of them thought about it at all. And my husband, bless his heart, is a few years older than I am, and his only memories of World War II is planting carrot seeds in a victory garden, and it was just not on his radar screen. I was this asthmatic little kid who sat with my grandmother and soaked up the history of the Middle East long before it was a popular activity. But I do think that my own feeling when I heard that news on the radio and saw it in the paper was, wow, you know, my grandma read the Bible and that's how come she knew this was going to happen. I think my next profound memory of that sort was years later when the Six-Day War happened and the Israelis took the old city. And that was actually the day of my 30th birthday, and I was sitting in the front steps of my house in suburban Minneapolis looking at that in the newspaper. I have all these, you know, epiphanies reading the newspaper. But anyway, I looked at that and I buried my face in my hands and I said, God, you're doing something in our time and I don't want to miss it. I have to say, after all these years, I haven't missed much.
That's incredible. I can imagine. It's very exciting that there's a state in progress, yeah. And we watch it develop. Esther, can you just tell us a little bit about how you felt?
Well, I felt very fortunate to be alive at this moment in history when after 2,000 years, there's suddenly a state. And I find it very difficult to deal with people who don't understand the miraculous element. I mean, that suddenly the Jews have a place to go. I mean, if, heaven forbid, something else happens, they were turned away from the United States, as we know from, you know, by, and then other countries wouldn't receive them, and they were consigned to a horrible death in 6 million cases. And so, and to be greeted with Holocaust denial now, even after all the documentation, and I was appointed by President Bush to be on the United States Holocaust Memorial Council.
That's so, the older Bush? The father?
The older Bush.
Yes, Bush 41.
Exactly. And so it's strange in looking back to realize that that there wasn't an outcry. And, you know, how could that happen, that the world could be so silent? And yet we're living through exactly the same thing right now. And it's just terrifying to me. And that's why I feel so strongly that we have to educate people and understand that the Holocaust was real, despite foreign leaders denying it, and to publicize the positive aspects of a free Jewish country that really is in the forefront of the global war against terrorism.
I would like to quote George Bernard Shaw, which says, "We learn from history that we learn nothing from history." And the question that I would like to ask, it's why do you think it is so easy to have a double standard when it comes to the Jewish state?
Well,
it's for both of you. I'm sorry that you are in shock.
Again, I think it's back. A book I always recommend is Dennis Prager's Why the Jews, which kind of examines the history of anti-Semitism and the outcome of that the Jews are in a unique position in the world. I mean, even Fiddler on the Roof, we hear Tevye saying, so choose someone else for a while, but but that isn't one of the options. Years ago, when my son was working as a freelance writer in Jerusalem, he lived in Ein Kerem out in the suburbs, and there was a young Israeli high school kid who lived next door who kind of hung around with him and kept saying, boy, when I'm out of school, I'm out of here. I'm going to go someplace where nobody knows I'm Jewish. And my son would put his arm around his shoulder and said, guy, they're going to know. You got to get used to that. You represent something whether you like it or not. And true. I think the Jews have a call that they're kind of stuck with. And as a Christian, I think it's my job to help support them in that call.
Esther, as you mentioned, you've been connected to many presidents over the years, and if you don't mind, we've got a little bit more time before we take another break. If you could also answer that same question about why do you think there's a double standard when it comes to Israel?
It's a question I ask myself often, and I really don't have any answers, to be perfectly honest with you. I deliberate about why all the time, and I find myself too busy defending us and concentrating on how to put a positive face on everything that is positive by just telling the truth. And we do have a newsletter that is a free subscription, and it's a daily news summary of all the very best articles about Israel and the issues. I mean, we're not afraid to face the issues, and we confront that head on. So many Jewish organizations, I think, are still very timid about expressing their opinion, and I feel that we don't have a reason to exist if we don't really take a position. So I busy myself with determining what the positions are, not figuring out why we can't answer that question.
Well, I will admit that it's terribly difficult to live with daily, on a daily basis, to watch this double standard in action, ongoing, always, continuous, all the time. We're speaking with Joanne Magnuson and Esther Levins, who are chaverot and lifelong friends and friends of Israel. Joanne Magnuson is the director of Christian Friends of Yad Vashem, and Esther Levins, the CEO and founder of Unity Coalition for Israel. And as she mentioned, if you get in touch with her, and we give you the websites later, you can get newsletters and find out more about what they have to offer. And we're going to go into a break now, and we will be continuing to talk with Joanne and Esther after the break.
1590 WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
Sparkling River Condominiums is ideally located along the Merrimack River in Hudson, New Hampshire. It is the perfect blend of a classic New England setting and contemporary interior design. Age restricted for people 55 and over, Sparkling River offers 4 different floor plans, all having attached garages and full basements. Our superbly constructed homes enjoy many upgraded features as standard and are serviced by town utilities, natural gas, and high-speed internet. The low monthly fee permits a maintenance-free lifestyle for the residents. The Sparkling River model is open for viewing Friday and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, please visit our website at www.sparklingrivernh.com. That's www.sparklingrivernh.com. Or give us a call at 603-882-2210. That's 603-882-2210. Sparkling River, an outstanding value and a great place to call home.
Supreme Court Briefs, sponsored by the National Legal Center.
Grutter and Gratz versus Bollinger, the affirmative action debate. In a society that is supposed to be colorblind, the role that race may play in employment or education opportunities continues to divide the justices just as it does the country. In 2003, in a pair of cases involving the University of Michigan, the court clarified the law, at least insofar as college admissions are concerned. The court ruled that states do have a compelling interest in promoting diversity on their college campuses. Admissions policies that take race into consideration do not violate the Constitution, but only if they are narrowly tailored to achieve the state's purpose. Race may be considered among other factors, but it may not be the overriding factor. The court was sharply divided, as it often is, on questions involving race. The decisions in the Michigan cases may not be the court's last word.
Supreme Court Briefs is brought to you by the National Legal Center as a public service.
I shoved the envelope under my sweater and sneaked to the kitchen. Mom was on the phone in the front room. I didn't want to have to explain anything. I just wanted to be by myself. Clutching the envelope tightly, I stepped onto the ladder at the bottom of the treehouse. Something caught my eye above me and I looked up. Light! It looked as if there were a firework display going on inside the treehouse. Crackling and snapping and whizzing sounds spun around above my head. Light shot out in sparks, dancing to the popping of noise. My first thought was to scream fire and run to the house to get Mom. My legs trembled as I inched upward, creeping up the rungs as quietly as I could. My heart banged so hard that it felt as if someone were hitting my chest. A couple more steps, and then I leaned forward, craning my neck to look inside. And then I looked up and saw... To find out what happens next, read Philippa Fisher's Fairy Godsister by Liz Kessler. Explore new worlds and check out more cool books at your local library. And visit read.gov. Brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Thanks for supporting the local businesses you hear advertised and highlighted every day on 1590 WSMN.
We're back with Israel is Real on WSMN 1590 Nashua's News and Talk. We're your hosts, Rachel and Sonia. We're two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. We're here on the air with your support, and I can say that we're very grateful for that. So please consider continuing donating or advertising. You can contact us at israelisrael1590@gmail.com. israelisrael1590@gmail.com, and we'd love to have your feedback as well. You're also listening to us on www.wsmnradio.com. Did you know? Oops, hold on. I'll ask you what you know. Hold on. Here we go. Did you know? These things happen. Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel and informs you of how its technical advances personally benefit you? Did you know Israel's researchers developed a heart pump that saves the lives of people with congestive heart failure? To receive Vision's email alerts and be informed about Vision's educational activities and opportunities, visit Vision's website at www.nh4israel.org. That's www.nh4israel.org and www.nh4israel.org. And we're speaking with Joanne Levinson. Joanne. Okay, it's that time of day. I need a coffee. Joanne Magnuson, the director of Christian Friends of Yad Vashem, and Esther Levins, the CEO and founder of Unity Coalition for Israel, who is here receiving an award, the Genesis Award, from the Christians and Jews United for Israel. And I just want to make mention also that Esther's organization is called Israel Unity Coalition, and you can reach that at israelunitycoalition, all one word, .org. IsraelUnityCoalition.org. And you can receive newsletters and find out more information about global radical Islam, calling for an international caliphate under Sharia law, the establishment of a Palestinian terror state under Hamas and Fatah, the United Nations, the refugees, UNRWA, UNRWA, and UNHCR, the United States politics, the media and education, the threat of the nuclear Iran, dependency on Arab oil, all sorts of fun topics that are hot in the news today. But you can find out the real truth about these things, and also you can help out by contacting IsraelUnityCoalition.org. That's Esther's organization. And I wanted to ask both of you, actually, and I guess we'll start with Esther since this is your platform here. Why do you think it's important that a Jewish state exists? Because I know that at the moment there's sort of a world kind of, it seems like almost a ganging up against Israel to go along with what some leaders would like to see it wiped off the map of the earth and not to exist. Why is it important that we have a Jewish state and it remains a Jewish state?
Well, I think the Holocaust is really the answer to that. The impossible happened. And the Jews in Europe were certainly ill-prepared. And who could imagine that such a horrific thing would take place, and that the Jews would be completely helpless, and that the doors to all the countries were slammed and shut, and there was no place for the Jews to go to escape, and I view it just strictly as a humanitarian insurance policy, perhaps, that if anything even equal to that or lesser or more, that there has to be a place for Jews to continue to thrive and live and bring a message of peace and hope to the world, really.
I think that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned before, people need to support and help each other. And again, with your chaverut, your friendship, mm-hmm. as a Jew and a Christian, doing that together, if we could pull a Muslim in there, that would be great. Joanne, it's really great that we have that kind of support. Joanne, why do you feel that it's important that the Jewish state did come into existence and continues to exist as a Jewish state?
Well, we talked earlier about having a moral compass, and I think for most people in the civilized world, that moral compass has to do with the message that the Jews brought to the world originally of ethical monotheism and a God who gave us rules to live by, not to make us miserable, but to enable us to live in a civilized fashion together in a world at peace. And that's a lot of weight to put on the shoulders of, there's probably at max 14 or 15 million Jews in the world today. They're badly outnumbered and nearly destroyed during the nightmare years of 1933 to 1945. But the fact that, and again, as I said about Tevye, I'm sure as a Jewish person, all of you get sick and tired of having to bear that burden in the world. But I do feel that people of goodwill, and particularly Christians, whose text says that we're grafted in to a Jewish root, need to take some responsibility. And I think being proactive is so important. One of the things I've so enjoyed about working with Esther over the years, we met in about 1989 at an AIPAC meeting, and we've kind of been hanging out together ever since. But I, thinking of ways to get this message into the rank and file, under the grassroots. We kiddingly say, she's in Kansas and I'm in Minneapolis, and we're trying to micromanage the Middle East from the Middle West. But but we try day after day, month after month, year after year, to at least raise consciousness, get people thinking about what we can do together. And I have found that a very satisfying way to spend your life. I'm at the age where most of my friends are retiring, and I always say, last thing I want to do is sit in a warm climate with lukewarm people amusing myself. I'd much rather be involved in something that matters, that can really make a difference in the world and impact the rising generation. And so my challenge to older people is, I hope you're as dangerous as my grandmother was to me.
Now, again, I want to stress that your organizations are involved in education, in educating and raising awareness. These are not necessarily political endeavors. And I think that's really important to stress that this is not a political work, although it's involved with politics. Mm-hmm. But it's a matter of educating. And
in a sense, I would say that politics, in the best sense, is how people live and work together. So while there are political issues, it isn't a negative to state your policy preferences and defend them. And I think that's really what Esther has worked so hard to do, that there are policies that will more likely lead towards good results and policies that may lead to bad results. Identifying them is part of the political process. One of the things I love about being an American is that we're able to talk to our government leaders. I mean, I can go to Washington with, there's a group called Christians United for Israel, headed up by Reverend John Hagee in Texas, and some people like it and some people don't, but they've brought 4,000 Christians to Washington the last 4 years to go and visit their congressmen and talk to these people. That's part of the process. That isn't negative politics. That's stating your preferences to the people you elected.
And also, I do believe that 9/11 changed the climate of what we had to do. Actually, I got started with Steve Emerson and Jihad in America, which he produced for PBS. And that was in 1994 that he produced it. And I saw it on public television once. And then it was completely taken off the market, completely. And we happen to have some copies. So, what we did was we got a grant to distribute it to Congress, and we did that. And I started working with Steve Emerson at that point, 1995. And nobody was paying attention, of course. The Congress wasn't paying attention. One of the things that was so amazing to me was what a center the Kansas City area was for Islamic terrorism and the conferences that they were holding in Kansas City. And that's how Steve Emerson himself wandered in to a meeting, and it started him on this path that he's followed as a reporter and an investigative reporter on this subject. And he has done so wonderfully. And after 9/11, we did a landslide business, because his Jihad in America wasn't really available. You couldn't order it from PBS because certain forces took it off the air. So it was, it began with that, and I think incidents have forced us to get more political and to really feel that our only reason for existence was to take a strong position in what we believed in, and that the moral equivalence that's so popular today in the colleges and that the kids are taught and that everything is equal has to be countered, and that's what we try to do. And I would hope that people who are hearing this would subscribe to our free newsletter. We reach about 25,000 people every day. And we will flood you with information, probably gentle. More than you want. But at any rate, if you would just order it from IsraelUnityCoalition.org, that would be just wonderful. We'd be glad to email it to you.
That's great. We're running out of time, though. We still have a few minutes. I just wanted to... Well, I don't even know how to say these things anymore. I think it's great that there's a friendship going on between the Christians and Jews, and that they're working together in doing that. Again, if we could get, you know, some Muslims on board, that would be great. I just want to say that Israel, in a sense, is we've always thought that Israel would be a light unto the world. I hope it's going to be a positive light, and that your work showing that that Christians and Jews can work together will bring a sort of a peace also to the rest of the world and those who are not yet on board with accepting Israel, its existence, and also as a Jewish state. If you could just say for a few seconds that we have left, why do you think the world finds it difficult to accept the existence of the Jewish state?
Well, I think the whole idea of the Jews being called to be a light to the nations, I mean, certainly no one in the Jewish world is saying they've done that perfectly. But the whole thing about the double standard, that all of a sudden this little nation 50 miles wide and 300 miles long on the edge of the Mediterranean is supposed to be in a state of sinless perfection and everybody else has excuses made for them, seems to me a ridiculous argument. And I want to be part of educating Americans. I've worked extensively in Poland and Eastern Europe. And
you mentioned something about the March for the Living.
Yes, I've been privileged to work for a number of years with the U.S. directors of March of the Living. I've brought Christian observer teams to March of the Living on a number of occasions. This last summer, I was part of a seminar program with Christian college students who were taken on a trip by Christians United for Israel to Poland and Israel, which was life-changing. And more of this needs to happen, these educational opportunities for the youth. So thanks for the opportunity to share some of these thoughts.
We're ever grateful to have you. Again, we've been speaking with Joanne Magnuson, the director of Christian Friends for Yad Vashem, and Esther Levins, the CEO and founder of Unity Coalition for Israel. To get in touch with them and find out more, you can also write us at israelisreal1590@gmail.com. We just want to give you a little bit about Shabbat.
As the sun sets in Israel, we welcome Shabbat, the Sabbath day. This week, we begin reading the Torah from the beginning, and our portion is Bereshit, which is Genesis. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth, which is Bereshit, Genesis 1:1. This verse seems to be one of the hardest verses of the Torah to comprehend. And why? Because in Bereshit, in the beginning, if there is a beginning, what was beforehand? And second, Bara Elohim, God created. What is the nature of creation and the creator? And three, because we need to decide, what was created first, the heaven or earth? Those are only few of the questions that this portion will raise. Shabbat Shalom from Israel is real.
Shabbat Shalom from Israel is real. Again, you can hear Esther and Joanne speaking tonight at Etz Chaim Synagogue on 1 1/2 Hood Street in Derry. Israel is real. Thanks for listening.
Wake up and start your day with George Russell's Morning Liftoff, 6 to 10 on 1590 WSMN Nashua.